Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd, who claimed to... He's on a boat. I'm sure there will be a wake surfing video in the very near future. A not-so-humble brag from our fearless leader, Colin Cowherd. All right, I got a lot to get to. NBA ratings down. I have some hypotheses. I think it's very important that we point out hypotheses. That is, those of us who paid attention in science class. I can't remember much anything, right? I don't know the sign for boron from the, was it the scientific table? Is that what it's called? Right? But what I do know is there's a difference between a hypothesis and a theory. Right? A hypothesis is something that has yet to be proven. A theory is one, a hypothesis that has, on some level, been proven scientifically to be accurate. So this is more of a hypothesis and stuff. I have thoughts on the NBA ratings. Let's begin with this. The LA Lakers completely and thoroughly dominate the Portland Trailblazers. And the dude in me wants to go, ha! Told you so. See, when I told Colin that Portland would be too gassed and that they didn't have a matchup for Anthony Davis or for LeBron James, I was right. You know, I almost feel like the bad guy in Scooby-Doo. And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling kids. But then I stop and I take a breath and I try and figure out, all right, but what is the real takeaway? And I honestly watched a lot of basketball yesterday. And again, this is part of my hypothesis for why NBA ratings year to year are down, even on ESPN. Right? And the hypothesis basically goes like this: basketball's on all the time. Right? It's on all the time. And so there isn't the level of intensity normally reserved for the playoffs. There isn't anything special. It's not only on at night. Like, literally, basketball is on all the time, which is great for those of us ball guys, and we can watch all the time. But for mainstream America, there just isn't the same sense of urgency when it's on every night and there's just game after game, and it's really kind of hard to tell the difference between the playoffs and the regular season or even in the scrimmages. It literally looks exactly the same. But one of the things that has happened in the bubble happens in the regular season, and frankly, it's happened a lot in sports, mostly in basketball, is our infatuation with offensive stats, right? Offensive stats. Stats can tell the story and especially to people who haven't watched a basketball game or haven't watched the basketball game, but they need some context. The perfect example is LeBron James, who in the first game statistically was dominant. But in the fourth quarter, there were several times in which he deferred and it was obvious that he had to take over. What I find fascinating about yesterday, and I'll say this about Milwaukee and about Houston, but mostly about the LA Lakers, is I do feel like so many people are missing it. You have to play to your strengths, right? You got to play to your strengths. It's no different. Yesterday is National Radio Day, right? What are my strengths? Hey, I believe that I'm one of the best interviewers in radio. Those are my strengths. I know what my weaknesses are. I won't share them with you, but we also won't do them. Right? Colin's strengths are He has really strong opening segments, a lot of really interesting business metaphors. I have some of that. It's not as strong as Collins. That's why he plays to those strengths. You listen to Fox Sports Radio, and different shows are portrayed differently, right? Play to your strengths. The number one thing I learned when I was trying to play professional basketball, and if I could do it again, when I played coming out of college, I had a reputation of a guy who couldn't shoot. And so you know what I set off to do? Proved to everybody I could shoot. Do you know what that was? A mistake. That's what amateurs do. Amateurs try to prove to you that the scouting report you have on them is completely wrong. Whereas professionals go like, yeah, okay, I can shoot. I give every once in a while I'll knock down an open one. But there's no reason I can't make a ton of plays without shooting. Play to your strengths. That's what pros do. And what is the strength of this L.A. Lakers team? It's not three-point shooting. I think that's been made obvious. Right? What's lost in the palaver about does LeBron have it anymore? And I think, you know, I'm going to play for you a cut in a second that does kind of explain what it's like to be in your mid-30s trying to compete with guys in their 20s and earlier 30s that haven't played as much basketball as he's played, aren't as big a body as he is. But what this, forget LeBron's scoring. The Lakers have the best record in the Western Conference, which it's inarguable it's a tougher conference than the Eastern Conference, right? And it may not be at its peak this year because Golden State chose not to really compete because the Spurs are in transition because, you know, Porzingis hadn't played in a year and a half and Luka is just in his second year. Like, they're not yet there, but they're close. You can see Phoenix starting to figure it out, but it took them, you know, having 3 months off and in the bubble to when they finally kind of figured it out. The Pelicans feel like they may be a year or two away from having full Zion. So the West is not what it's been or what it may well be, but it's still pretty damn good, right? They had the best record in the West. Why? Why? The whole year they haven't been able to shoot. That hasn't changed. The whole year LeBron James has been up and down in terms of his burst athletically. The whole year they struggle with Anthony Davis finishing games and being aggressive in the fourth quarter. Danny Green has looked like the oldest man on earth all year. Kyle Kuzma's been up and down. How could they possibly have the best record in the West? What's their strength? Ha-ha! The defense. They've been the best defensive team in the NBA. And while, yeah, they lost Damian Lillard, he hit a couple deep threes, and they got confused, and Melo hit a couple, and CJ McCollum hit some shots. They're just amazing in game one. The fact is that in spite of that late barrage by the Portland Trailblazers and the win by the Blazers, who want to score in the 120, scored 100 points. And last night it was 88. We do this thing where you only play well by anybody's estimation if the stats say you scored a bunch of points and had a bunch of assists. And if you throw in some rebounds, meaningful or meaningless, it doesn't really matter. That's what we care about. But what's the truth? The truth is, if the other team doesn't score, none of your ineptitude actually matters. It just doesn't. None of your ineptitude matters. And I sit here and look at the Lakers, and I feel like so many people are missing what they did last night is the reason that they were the one seed. It's the same thing that it's what's been lacking with Houston. And granted, they were playing a very young Oklahoma City team. But if you watch that game in the fourth quarter, they decided they're not going to score. And that's what happened with the Milwaukee Bucks, who have been an elite defensive team. Yes, did Giannis get it going early? And did they get out to a big lead? And they had Orlando on their heel? Sure, all of that can be true. But we say this all the time, Colin and I. In the NFL, you're not going anywhere unless you got a top 10 defense. And in the NBA, the truth about the Warriors during their championship run and when they won 73 games, they were the best, analytically, they were the best defensive team in the NBA. When that fell apart, so too did the Warriors. So too did the Warriors. All right, we got a bunch to get to today. Coming up next, I'm going to give you my thoughts. My thoughts on exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen tonight with the LA Clippers. All right. That's next. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Listen up, fellas. Now you can use the right tools for the job thanks to this revolutionary company, Manscaped. Their Lawnmower 3.0 is geared for skin-safe technology, so this trimmer reduces cuts. Get 20% off plus free shipping with the code HERD, H-E-R-D, manscaped.com. That's manscaped.com. Use the code HERD. I use it. Colin, he's not like part bear like I am. He's just not. You guys did hear that I beat Colin in tennis this week. Now, I got to point out that generally Colin plays all the time. He's taken back to playing a little bit of golf. Maybe that has distracted him from his tennis game. I hadn't played a ton. You know, he and I played sporadically here through the summer, usually just a set. It was not pretty. There was one side of the court, which, and this is the type of suburban grit that you have only from Cowherd and Gottlieb. We played through the fact that when you toss the ball up in the air, his right hand of the sun was right in your eyes like a laser. But somehow we gritted through. But without using my big booming first serve, which occasionally lands in the court, I just went all kind of second serves, big kicker serves, whatever. I was able to beat the Herd in one set. Should be pointed out that it was hot and I was pretty gassed and I wanted a beer. And so after, I think, winning 6-3 or 6, I think it was 6-4. 6-4, we chose to not play the second set, which was a smart decision by me. Get your first dub and then get the hell out. Speaking of getting the dub, this is LeBron James on why it's so much harder to get dubs in the playoffs this year.
I've had some great teammates in my career. AD is one of those unicorns. And he does things that some of my other great teammates are not capable of doing. But in the same sense, I've played with Dwayne Wade, and he could do some things that, you know, the AD is not capable of doing. And I also played with Kyrie Irving. He can do some things that D-Wade and AD is not capable of doing. So I've had the luxury of playing with some great players, and that's just three of them.
That's just three of them. He went on to say that this season is like three seasons. And while I understand the logic behind it, with LeBron going like, hey, man, it's been a lot, three seasons. Like, you know, you're trying to turn around a franchise. You have a new coach. You finally got it going. They were the best team in the NBA before it shut down. Then it shuts down. Then you got to fire back up. Then you got training camp again. Then you got, like, preseason games again. Then games, now playoffs. It feels like three seasons. But I actually don't think it necessarily feels that weighty for other guys. That's your mid-30s. Wait till you get to your 40s, right? You're like, man, I used to dominate that. I used to crush that. Like, yeah, dude, now you're in your mid-30s. I used to be able to play all day. When we're kids and you're a basketball player, like, I grew up playing in a place, Miles Square Park in Fountain Valley, California. My dad would get me up. We'd go and play. And I was little, so to get in, like, I was, like, 13 years old, maybe 12 years old. And he would take me to Miles Square. He'd call a game. He'd get me in a game. And he'd watch me play a little bit. And then he'd leave me after the first game, he'd coach me up. And he'd leave me $5. And I'll be back later. And then, you know, I'd go across the street, get a slice of pie or two and a Gatorade. It was like $2.50. Do that a couple times a day. Just stay there and play ball. And you could run on. How many times when you're a kid, you can run on fumes on anything. And try that in your 30s or your 40s. You're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I played on cement. I can't believe that I tried to eat a hot dog and a Coke and played basketball. How did I do this? It's just different. It's just different. You play three games in your 40s or 30s, and it feels like six games. You play three games when you're in your teens or your 20s, it feels like a warm-up. So I do think that all of this stress, all of the season and whatever – it's probably more taxing on everybody, but especially taxing when you've been doing it for 17 years and you're LeBron James and, you know, you're carrying 260 pounds of pure muscle. I think it's a lot. And I think there are times which he's exhausted, and that's why he can't be his regular dominant self. Let's get to Vince Close with the news.
No. Turn on the news.
This is the Herd Line News.
Vincent, what do you have, my friend?
Got some breaking news for you, actually. Major League Baseball has decided to postpone the Mets versus Yankees series this weekend out of abundance of caution and to allow for additional testing, contact tracing, and contact tracing to be performed with the Mets organization. Originally, they had canceled yesterday's game against the Marlins and today's game against the Yankees, but they have decided to fully cancel the series. Postpone, not cancel.
Yeah, I mean, that's to get, one coach and one player tested positive for COVID, and they're just trying to figure out what's what. They left the player and the coach behind in Miami. That's not a bad place to quarantine, I want to point out. The worst place on earth to quarantine. Although summer in Miami sounds buggy. No thanks. Yeah, I mean, I do feel on some level, like, baseball seemed to have this thing set. Like, all right, we're good. Everybody's taking this seriously. And now you got another positive test and a postponement of a major series. So between the Cardinals having to play, like, 100 games in 10 days and not having the Subway Series, baseball is definitely going to limp to the finish.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
Yeah, definitely going to be interesting. So we move on to the NFL. Washington's football team got hit with some more bad news yesterday when it was revealed that head coach Ron Rivera was diagnosed with squamous cell carcinoma located in his lymph node. Rivera told ESPN's Adam Schefter about the diagnosis Thursday night and explained to Schefter that he discovered a lump on his neck in early July, and when it didn't go away after a couple weeks, he visited a doctor. While Washington has a plan B in place, Rivera said, I'm planning on coaching. Doctors encouraged me to do it. They said, if you feel strongly, do it. Don't slow down. Do your physical activities. But everyone keeps telling me by weeks three or four, you'll start to feel it. Rivera also said that the cancer is in the early stages and is considered very treatable and curable.
Well, that's the really good news, is that it's really treatable and curable, right? And the bad news is he's obviously going to feel bad and be worn down. But I like Ron Rivera, this is a hell of a year for him, right? Like, yeah. He gets fired, and he gets fired from an aging team and ownership change, and ends up not just taking over as head coach of the Washington football team, but he's like the football czar. You know, he got to pick out, you know, have a little bit of say in the fact that they don't have a nickname, got to say in front office. Obviously, he's going to have a major decision to make, or series of decisions to make, with quarterback position. And because Dan Snyder is so persona non grata, like, Ron Rivera is their white knight, really. And now he obviously has this to battle through. This is a heck of a year, man. Heck of a year for him. Obviously, you hope that he recovers and then proceeds to turn the football team around.
Yep. All right. So we move on to the NBA. Damian Lillard exited Thursday's game to the Los Angeles Lakers after suffering a finger dislocation in the third quarter. Trailblazers announced that the x-rays were negative. Lillard, however, feared that he had broken his finger.
When it first happened, I was, pulling at it, and it was a little bit, I've never done that. So I pulled it back a little bit myself, but it still was out. And they had to put it back for me. And at that point, I thought it was broke. So I was just frustrated because I had to go back and get it looked at. I was just frustrated. You know, it was just bad timing. I handled the ball a lot, so just knowing that there's going to be some discomfort, and, I don't know how that's going to feel or how it's going to go, is frustrating.
Now, the injury happened on his non-shooting hand, so that's actually a little bit of good news. Later on in his post-game news conference, he was asked about his availability for Game 3, and he said that he is planning on playing.
Yeah, and it's a big post, like, it's his left hand. I don't understand guys that in basketball, when they hurt their left hand, they're right-handed, they don't play anyway. Like, you can play through it. But it's a dislocated finger. It's, let's not make him out to be a war hero.
Yeah, it seems like more of an annoyance than anything else.
Yes. Now, in all truth, the way he dislocated his finger, I actually broke my middle finger on my right hand in eighth grade, the same way hitting somebody's shoe. He hit, if you saw, it was Anthony Davis's shoe was what his finger kind of ran into, and it got dislocated, and it stings like hell. So I've actually broken a finger that way, but it was my own shoe. It's falling out of bounds. I was playing one-on-one with my brother, and I tried to throw the ball off of him, and somehow I clipped my own shoe, and my finger snapped. Just does in fact happen. But they've done a great job on Lillard. I know he got loose late in game one, but they really did a good job on him, and then they bottled him up yesterday as well.
And finally, Patriots wide receiver Julian Edelman has weighed in on the quarterback competition in New England to replace Tom Brady. Edelman is currently working with Cam Newton, 2019 fourth-round pick Jarrett Stidham, and veteran Brian Hoyer.
Right.
Edelman told WEI about Cam Newton, he's definitely a former MVP for a reason. The guy's a professional, he works his tail off, he's extremely dynamic, and he has a charming personality. It's been fun to be around. He has a confidence about him. All quarterbacks have confidence, but it's just a little different with Cam. It's a vibe that you can feel and get a mindset. This comes on the heels of Bill Belichick saying that there's a possibility of platooning his quarterbacks into the regular season. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of chemistry can be built with his wide receivers.
Well, I mean, look, there's a lot here kind of to unpack. I mean, the first thing is, if we're being honest, it's hard for anybody to learn a new offense, you know, when they've, or a new system, new verbiage, when they've been with one team their entire career. You don't have an off season. So, I also think, if we're fair, if you listen to the question, the answer, Belichick didn't say he was going to platoon. He was asked about platooning him, and he basically said, you know, all options are open, right? Which is a non-answer answer, and it doesn't allow the Dolphins to know who they're preparing for. But I don't think it's crazy to think about platooning him early, because he's not going to have a full grasp of it. Hoyer will. That's why Hoyer's look so much better, because he knows exactly what he's doing, where the football is supposed to go, and there's no kind of thinking involved. It's just kind of reacting, whereas Cam's not there yet. And while there's obviously going to be a push to play Cam early, I think back to when Carson Palmer retired with the Cincinnati Bengals, and then mid-year he gets traded to the Oakland Raiders, and he was supposed to sit for a couple weeks, and they threw him in. And he threw three picks, and he was terrible, terrible. And Carson Palmer's a really good quarterback, but he didn't know what he was doing. You know, you don't know the hot reads, you don't know the verbiage, everything's coming at you fast. And these are brilliant guys, but it's a lot when you don't have a ton of time. I think that's the same thing with Cam. Like, there's no reason you can't put him in, run some read option, run some different stuff, you know, give him a small set of plays, and let him slowly but surely, you know, at times watch and figure out exactly what he's supposed to do playing for Josh McDaniels.
Yeah, and Cam apparently got some more reps in yesterday's practice and looks to get more today, because Ian Rappaport reported that Jarrett Stidham has a leg injury, not thought to be serious, but he will be limited in practice today.
And that's Vince with news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Heelan.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin Cowherd. Kurt Heelan joins us. He's the lead NBA writer and managing editor at NBCSports.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Basketball Talk, and he's going to join us in a moment. We'll get his thoughts on last night's games, his thoughts on tonight with the Clippers. Patrick Beverley still, I don't think he's going to play, you know, and it's become kind of the Luka show. I do think it's fascinating that a Clipper team who we did have a sense, like, the regular season does teach you a lot, right? It really does teach you a lot. It gives you that large sample size. And the large sample size told us that the Clippers, super talented, not great chemistry, most starting lineups in the NBA this year. Like, they're still kind of shuffling things around. Whereas the Lakers, we knew they weren't a good shooting team, and sure enough, they haven't been a good shooting team. We knew they're an outstanding defensive team, and you know what? They've been an outstanding defensive team. That's why what Houston did yesterday was so surprising, how well and how hard they played defensively. Dare I say, James Harden in a defensive stance several times over? Like, that kind of surprising in terms of, in comparison to reputation. So we also have John Middlecoff's going to join us, and Mario Elie, three-time NBA champion, former Houston Rocket. Of course, Mario Elie, who started, he played in the USBL. He and I both USBL alums. Of course, he advanced far beyond the USBL after playing in that league, coming into professional basketball. You know, I'll offer this up in terms of my hypotheses as to why the ratings are down. Right? Do I think a portion of it is, a small portion of it is, there are some people like, man, I just want to watch sports. I want to get away from the social justice thing. Yeah, I think you're going to get some fans that get worn down by it. I also think, though, and I love it, but just there isn't a sense of urgency when literally every game looks exactly the same. We've all marveled at how good a job they've done at how they've made it look, but it's literally exactly the same. There's very little distinction team to team, game to game, because the court's the same. The fake crowd only changes, you know, the faces and the color of the jersey. Like, that's all that changes. So when it's on all the time and it kind of always looks the same, it's really hard to tell you, no, this is an important game that you have to watch. It looks like the warm-up games, looks like the regular season games, looks like the postseason games. And then, you know, not having Golden State in it, I think obviously hurts. You don't have Kevin Durant or Kyrie Irving, some of the big stars. You don't have Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and Draymond Green. Like, that's five of the 20 biggest stars in the NBA. And two of the five biggest stars in the NBA in Durant and Steph Curry, and they're not playing. And that, you know, those guys, the NBA is built on stars. Those guys bring an audience. Let's welcome in Kurt Helein, who joins us, lead NBA writer, managing editor, NBCSports.com. Care to offer up a hypothesis? NBA ratings down on ESPN playoff-wise, 40% year-to-year. What would your hypothesis as to why be?
I think there's a couple things. I think you hit the nail on the head. I think that A, it is summer, it's a little off season. The games feel a little different because of the, you know, there's a lack of star power, especially without Curry and the Warriors. That was a team that had broken through even the casual fans and had this kind of cultural impact. I also think that this is just continuing part of the trend. We tend to simplify it as cord cutters and people, you know, people are streaming. They're not watching the traditional way. But I think it's bigger than that. I mean, Doug, you're still tied in. You still have got some ties to youth basketball, right? Like,
yeah.
You talk to, and I've you know, I've got two teenage daughters. I've got their friends who are playing AAU, and I know all these guys. They don't watch games.
Nope.
No, they do not. They get their highlights off of Instagram.
Yep.
They love the NBA culture. They watch highlights. They want a debate. They'd be happy to talk about whether LeBron's the GOAT or you know, who's the best player, you know, in the next draft. And it's part of the reason Zion Williamson came into this league. He was such an Instagram, internet, you know, youth star that he's already as marketable as anybody in the league because he brought that with him into the NBA. But those guys aren't watching games. And it's a culture, like, under 25 people are just not – they're not following the model that the NBA is built on to pay its bills, and it's going to be an issue for the league.
Yeah, it's interesting you bring it up. Adam Silver, I remember earlier this year, he talked about how, you know, do we change traditional start times because people don't watch at traditional times anymore?
Yeah.
But that's kind of what we've done here with the playoffs, and that hasn't worked, right?
Yeah.
It's just weird to throw on the, you know, the Bucks are on at you know, 11 o'clock on the West Coast. That is not going to – I don't care how many people are watching from home. That's not going to draw a big audience.
No, and you're right. Rolling the games all day in the same arena with the same, you know, I know they're putting the video, you know, they're dropping slightly different logos, but the same center court logo. And you're right, the games all have the same feel for them. It has a summer league feel, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm watching a summer league game.
Yeah, and look, again, I'm not sitting here telling you that it bothers me that you have social justice sayings on the back of a jersey, but it does not look like the NBA, right? Like, that. Yep. It's one of the things. Look, the NFL gets crushed for a couple of things, and I there's actually a science to it, right? The idea, they have a uniform code, and everybody's like, why do they have the uniform code? Because when you throw on the San Francisco 49ers, you turn on TV, you know exactly, oh, that's the San Francisco 49ers. Additionally, because of their franchise tag, and this is the most quarterback movement we've ever had, okay, ever. Yeah. But generally, you throw on the Packers, it's Aaron Rodgers. You threw on, for 20 years, you threw on the Patriots, there's Tom Brady. You know, you have your guys. Whereas the NBA, I think the player movement has changed things and made it a little bit harder to keep up with, wait, who am I? My favorite player plays for a different team now. I don't like that. I'm struggling with that.
I think fans in some arena, it's weird. I think you're getting with the younger generation, especially with the NBA, and I think it's less with baseball and football. you're getting LeBron fans or Steph Curry fans. I live, you know, again, I'm in Southern California. I know so many kids, under 18, with Steph Curry jerseys.
Sure.
Like, and Northern California is not exactly popular in Southern California.
No.
But Curry is. Like, Curry's a cultural, and you're seeing guys wear Trae Young jerseys because Trae Young's fun to watch.
Right.
Like, right, you know, he's bombing threes from deep, and, you know, who cares if he's playing defense? Clearly he doesn't. So, like, there's a sense of becoming fans of a player in a way, and they're like, all right, well, LeBron James is a Laker now, then I'm going to root for the Lakers, as opposed, and there is a large Laker nation, and there are fan bases for each team. But there are fans who jump around and are not fazed by it in a way that, like, you and I and certainly our parents would have been freaked out by.
Keith Helang joining us here in The Herd. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin. Speaking of defense, I thought that was the story of yesterday, especially with the Lakers. Like, we all get so hot and bothered over the lack of shooting. That's been a problem all year. But the reason they had the best record in the West is what they've done, frankly, in both games, holding Portland even to 100 when you can't make a shot, and then 88 last night. Like, this is who the Lakers are. They're built based upon their defense.
And they are long. Every coach who comes through Los Angeles, and it's true of the Clippers too, but especially with the Lakers, they come through and they're like, what's the game plan? Because they're long. They're hard to play against. This is a big athletic team that is disruptive because of that length. And, you know, the Bucks are the same way. I think that there's something to this defensively. But it worked. You're right. The Lakers really cranked up their defense. Not only were their rotations sharp last night, Doug, but did you watch when they rotated? They, like, landed with aggression, right? Like, they didn't just casually rotate out. Like, they landed and got in your face and were right there. And Houston's been doing that. We'll see how long they can keep it. You know, I'm not a question of if they can keep it up. It's just what happens when they run into teams that just shoot over them anyway.
Yeah, no, but, I thought Houston was actually really impressive defensively yesterday.
Yeah, they've been playing great defense throughout the bubble, honestly. They were, I think, sixth in the seeding games defensively, and they've played great so far, really bothering Oklahoma City. The Lakers have joined that club. The Bucks started to join that club. You know, I picked the Clippers to win it all, and I'm not fully buying into them right now until I see them start playing like that, because they haven't.
Kurth Elin joining us, lead NBA writer, managing editor at NBCSports.com. Follow him on Twitter, @BasketballTalk. I follow him. You should, too. All right, let's get to the Clippers. They have really struggled trying to contain Luka and, a Dallas team built on offense. Obviously, you're not having to go back to Dallas ever, but still, it's 1-1. It could very easily be 2-0 if Porzingis hadn't gotten thrown out. They're still not going to have Patrick Beverley tonight. What are your thoughts on what's wrong with the Clippers?
They're struggling to defend the pick and roll. Let's be fair here. Luka's really good, right?
Yes.
Like, let's not mess around here. Luka's a top 10 player in the league. Borderline, I mean, leaving him off first team All-NBA on my ballot was one of the, like, I lost sleep over. I was trying to figure out how to make this, like, it was hard. He's that good at 21, and he's tearing them apart, because if you give him any space, he does that. And that said, the Lakers in the first game, like, seemed so concerned about him. They really almost overhelped on the pick and roll. They were out there, and then suddenly guys were getting open back door, and other shooters were open. Then they were adjusting, and suddenly Luka was racking up 42 points because they were just scrambling. This game, they didn't help at all, and it was a layup. Like, they were afraid to help off their guy, and they've got to find a balance, and they've got to, again, rotate with the kind of aggression and the kind of intent that the Lakers did yesterday, that we've seen with Houston, that we saw with the Bucks. They just haven't played defense on that level yet. Their offense has been fine, but they've got to find a defensive groove, and this is a hard team to do it against. Like you said, Dallas had the best offense in the league this year.
Yeah. Last thing, Kurt, before the playoffs began, who did you like to play in the finals?
I had Bucks and Clippers. I'm not 2 games in. I'm not totally ready to come off that yet. Let's put it this way. I'm not hitting the panic button, but
yeah.
I've located it.
Yes.
Like, I know where it is.
For which team are you more panicked about?
The Clippers. They have not Look, they just haven't built chemistry all year, and maybe that's starting to show. Patrick Beverley not being there really hurts them. But, again, they're just
– I think adding Reggie Jackson was a mistake. I'll be honest. I think adding Reggie Jackson was a mistake. I know at the time they added him, They needed depth at guard. And I get that Landry Shamet might not be right because he's coming back from COVID, but I thought they had a good thing going, and it just doesn't feel right with Reggie. Reggie, there's some good stuff, there's some bad stuff, but it seems to be about Reggie just trying to prove that he can score when he gets in the game. I'm not sure that he's the right fit for what they want to do.
I think you're spot on. Like he gets the ball and it feels like a flip of the coin, doesn't it? Like, is it a good decision, Reggie, or I'm an elite scorer who can score over three people, Kobe shot?
Yeah, it's a little bit more of the latter than the former, but I'm with you. Kurt, great stuff. Enjoy the hoops. It is on all day, which is, hey, it's good for us guys that love ball like you do. Love the content, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, Doug. Take care.
Kurt Heelan joining us. That's from NBCSports.com. Listen up, fellas. Now you can use the right tools to get the job done. This revolutionary company, Manscaped, their Lawnmower 3.0 is geared with skin-safe technology. So this trimmer reduces cuts. Get 25% off plus free shipping with the code HERD, H-E-R-D, at Manscaped.com. That's Manscaped.com. Use the code HERD. Use the code HERD. I like this story. I like this story a lot. You know, this is fascinating to me in regards to the National Football League. What the Ravens were saying without saying when they said it to Dez Bryant yesterday. That's next in The Herd.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. John Middlecoff will join us next hour. Three and Out is his podcast. All Ball is my podcast. He does football. I do hoop. You can call us. I have a call-in number. Colin has a call-in number. 800-292-5150. Sure, what the hell? I don't know. Will he answer it? Somebody will answer. I don't know if I'll put you on, but I'll give it to you. Saw somebody tweet me. They're going to play golf at Miles Square Park. Miles Square Park is exactly what you think. It is a square mile in the middle of Fountain Valley, California. Why do they call it Miles? Because it's a square mile. It's just a big-ass park in the middle of Orange County. Before, they actually built a park called the Great Park. It was a pretty great park, but just not called the Great Park. Anyway. Middlecoff, Mario Ellie's going to join us. Mario Ellie's going to join us? I'm not sure I know the story of him blowing the kisses every time he hits the three. Mario Ellie, Rockets hero, former USBL alum, will join us later on the show. All right, I want to get to this. So Dez Bryant went and worked out for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I understand, look, Baltimore is not just talented, but they're loaded up with talent that fits their quarterback and their system. And I thought Colin, like, look, we joke about Colin sometimes saying things, which is like, yeah, you got to just, got to roll with it. Sometimes he sees things in sports we don't see. I thought his analogy, and I sent him a text like, this is really, like, this is really strong. He compared Giannis and Lamar Jackson, and I thought that was brilliant. Now, my thinking is similar. Like, he's like, well, you can't get, neither guy can get behind in the playoffs. True. But why is that? Because Giannis lacks that one primary skill. The worst thing he does is the thing you may need most to win at the highest level, which is shooting the basketball. The same thing goes for Lamar Jackson, which is the one thing you need to do best is probably the weakest part of his game, which is throwing a football consistently, accurately, just snap it to him, you know, read it, throw somebody open. Don't get me wrong. Hollywood Brown takes off the top of a defense. And their use of tight ends so he can throw inside the numbers is fantastic. And obviously they can run the football because he's a freak athlete and they have a stable of good running backs and an outstanding offensive line. But the reason that people were down on Lamar Jackson is not just what you see in the playoffs. You still see it rear its head in the regular season, which is there are just times in which he lacks normal accuracy. He's obviously improved. But there's just a wild scud throw. A lot of times he goes through his progressions, and maybe it's his fundamentals which have improved. I don't know. But there are just some wild misses. So when there was talk about Antonio Brown joining the Ravens, I was like, yo, that ain't going to work. Antonio Brown is a lot of things, and I think he's an incredible talent. Yes, he's a pain in the ass off the field, and yes, he's suspended half the year, and you're going to have to just hold your breath and hope he doesn't, you know, defame the name of your franchise. But he's a freak talent at wide receiver. The problem is that Antonio Brown has gotten more targets in the than anyone else in the NFL, I believe, three of the past 4 years. Obviously, last year he couldn't. Like, he's a 150-target-a-year guy, and that's not how the Ravens play. So they brought in Dez Bryant, which does make sense because you're like, hey, what if Dez Bryant's going to get back in the league, it's going to have to be like Anquan Boldin. You know, Boldin hurt his knee in college. I think he hurt his knee in the pros. Like, Boldin couldn't run, but he's brilliant as a football player. He was big, strong, tough, competitive, and he became a really good blocker. More than anything, he was just an old head who you could throw it to or not throw it to. He just kind of did his job and stuck in the league. Like, remember, Anquan Boldin walked away from the league like a year and a half ago for social justice reform, not because he had to, because he's like, I'm kind of done with this. He was with the Bills. He wanted to do something else. And I think that's how Dez wants to reinvent himself, and I think that's smart. But when you go and work out for the Ravens, and they're like, that was a really good work. That was a heck of a workout. Wait, are you going to offer a contract? No. It was a really good workout. It was a good workout. Like, yeah, that doesn't bode well for Dez Bryant with the Ravens, right? When you want them to come out and go like, that was awesome. Sign this paper. And we want you on the Ravens today. Look, it's good for Dez to put himself out there, and it shows that he's not trying to become going back to being, you know, the highest paid, the best wide receiver. He just wants to play football. I get it. But it also on some level, doesn't look good when you're Dez Bryant and they don't offer you a deal. I don't know if the Ravens really need another guy. They obviously just want to kick the tires on guys, but I think Dez at least is a better fit than Antonio Brown. All right, coming up next, my hypotheses on why the NBA's numbers are down. And is it fixable? Find out next in The Herd.